Hi, men. I'm Jonathan Daugherty, author of Grace-Based Recovery, and I'd love for you to join us in one of our upcoming online study groups. These eight-week groups take you through all the key principles of recovery from the Grace-Based Recovery book in a small group setting with other men on the same journey. The format is really simple and secure. We keep the groups to 10 men max, and we meet online in a private video room, so your story is safe with us. These groups are led by men who have traveled this road themselves and know firsthand how grace is the true engine of recovery and life transformation. I encourage you to take your next best step to freedom, joy, and peace. Register now for the next Grace-Based Recovery Group. We can't wait to connect with you. To register, go to bebroken.org/GBR. That's bebroken.org/GBR, or you can call us at 210-822-8201. Good day, friends. Jonathan Daugherty here with another edition of the PSR Podcast. You know, we're a listener-supported outreach of Be Broken Ministries, and we exist to help individuals and families move from sexual brokenness to wholeness in Christ and equip others to do the same. In today's episode, I sit down with Nick Stumbo. He's the director of Pure Desire Ministries, and we have an honest conversation about sexual brokenness and the impact of pornography, especially within the Christian community. And we dive into their new research from Pure Desire and the Barna Group titled Beyond the Porn Phenomenon. And this reveals surprising trends and the ongoing struggles that many face in silence. Nick shares insights from the research on breaking shame, creating safe spaces in churches, and practical ways that parents and leaders can support healthy conversations about sexuality. Together, we explore how compassion and openness can lead to real healing and hope. To learn more and get a copy of the research that's mentioned in this episode, visit puredesire.org. For additional resources, you can visit our website at bebroken.org or check out all the different links that we're going to put in the show notes for today's show. And of course, friends, we want to invite you to rate and review the podcast after you listen to it, because this really does help others to find this kind of content. All right, let's dig into today's super informative conversation with Nick. Well, all right, we have back with us today Nick Stumbo. Nick, how are you today?
Good. Yeah, thank you for having me back. It's always great to have conversations with you, Jonathan.
Yeah, so we've had you on a few times before to talk about all kind of stuff related to sexual brokenness. We had you on to talk about even your own story of being a pastor and kind of your own porn struggle. And now you are the director of Pure Desire Ministries. And today we're going to talk about a research project that you commissioned with the Barna Group. But before we get to that, what's going on in your ministry? What's new? Like, what are some things that you might want to share with our audience about Pure Desire and things that are just kind of on the forefront right now?
Well, thank you for asking that. I think the focus that we've had the last year or two has been around this data coming out. And, you know, for us, one of the things really driving that, we've been trying to ask the question more and more, how do we help equip churches and pastors, leaders in the local church? And as you know, and many others know, that can be very difficult because pastors are busy. Churches have a lot of conceptions or misconceptions about sexual brokenness and what should we do or shouldn't we do. And we've just been trying to figure out how could we help spark this conversation for more pastors and churches. And we felt like so many churches and pastors know and trust Barna. And if they hear it from Barna, it's legitimate, but they may not know us. And we could say the same thing, but if they're like, well, who's Pure Desire and what do they know and can we trust them? But if Barna updates them on what's happening in our world, we thought that might be perhaps a conversation starter. And from there, we asked the question, what's an easy next step funnel into exploring this area? And so we did create a couple of new resources. We've got a free youth leader library that is aimed at the youth leader or parents, just equipping them to have biblically based conversations with teenagers about sexuality. And so our team recorded 25, 3 to 5 minute videos, just equipping parents on everything from what do you say about masturbation? How do you understand the brain in light of scripture? And everything in between, how to have those awkward conversations with teenagers. And so we thought that might be like some low hanging fruit for parents and youth leaders to say, oh, I'd love to check that out now that I'm aware more and more of the data. So we created that as well as a new resource for parents, just a parent training course, how to talk with your kids about sex. And then also have made the decision, our introductory video course is called Sexual Integrity 101. And we've been offering that as a free preview for 30 days just to let pastors and leaders check it out. Because if you don't know us or what we do, that's a big step to say, I'm going to entrust this ministry to impact people in my church if you don't really know who we are. So we've said, well, let's just give people 30 days to watch it on their own. And if they love it and if it fits, we believe they'll use it in their church. But that I didn't mean for that to sound so sales pitchy. It was really the heart of it was to just say, how do we make it easier for someone to engage and not feel like they have to commit to the whole thing or, be ready to join a 10-month group before they can ever check out Pure Desire or how we approach healing? And so we just tried to think through from those angles, how do we make that first step an easier one? Because in so many cases, that first step is the hardest one.
That's so true. And obviously there's a lot going on in y'all's ministry, and you guys do a great job of really putting out a lot of good content for a lot of those steps in the process that people need and want to take in terms of learning more about how to live a life of sexual wholeness and integrity. Now you did this research that's called Beyond the Porn Phenomenon. You've shared a little bit, but can you give us a little bit more of the background? Because this sort of is coming off of the back of another research that had previously been done. Can you kind of tell us the story of how you got to this particular research?
That's right. I was sitting at a conference, like I'm sure you do, we're engaged in this area, so we hear a lot of people speak about it. And as the person was speaking, I thought, oh, that stat is from 2016 when Josh McDowell and Covenant Eyes worked with Barna to create the porn phenomenon. And that had a lot of great stats that many of us 7 and 8 years later were still using because there's not much else out there. And then they gave another stat and I was like, oh, that's from 2012. And another one, I'm like, well, that one's from 2008. And started wondering, is there anything new? And we looked around and other than a few anecdotal studies that had been done on college campuses, because those always seem to be the laboratory experiments at college campuses, I couldn't find much new information since 2016. And so we contacted Barna to say, are you planning anything? And they said no, but we get asked all the time to update that data from 2016 called the porn phenomenon. And we prayed, we talked to donors, we talked to our team and just felt like the timing was right, that God was putting it on our hearts to do. And so it is meant to be. Much of the data is compared to 8 years ago, going beyond the porn phenomenon, what's happened since then, but also asking questions about some new areas like the impact on relationships, what this behavior does within a marriage, the differences men and women have about how they view it, and then also asking some questions like things around mental health and well-being as it relates to or correlates to someone's their use of pornography. So I think in that regard too, not only does it go beyond the data by providing new updated ones, it delves into some areas of relationship and human behaviors that weren't studied in that first go around. So that was what led to the title of Beyond the Porn Phenomenon.
Yeah, that's really good. So a lot of times when people hear research or statistics or the fact that a study has been done, and anybody that you know this now firsthand, but anybody that's done a study, there's a lot of factors that go into that that can very quickly feel kind of academic, like, oh my goodness, this is sort of like graduate level type stuff. And for a lot of what we might call this the common folk like me out there, who is this research for? Because sometimes when you talk about the research, it can feel like, oh boy, this is starting to go over my head because you had, what's the, what do they call it? The variance and all these types of things that it's like, is this within the acceptable range? And, but like, who is this research for really?
that's a big part of the reason that we worked with Barna, because I think they are both experts in the area and extremely skilled at distilling down the information and putting it into a format that the rest of us can understand, if I could put it that way. And, you know, I would say there is a mind-numbing amount of data that I have access to that we didn't put into the report, and that someone who geeks out on that kind of thing could go down a rabbit hole on that for years probably. But I think Barna has an expertise there, like I said, of putting it on our level. They do work with a large number of pastors. They've told us that they believe they have 60,000 pastors that are on their email list. But then also, you know, they're not just for ministry leaders. They also, I think, appeal to the common man and woman of understanding the world around them. And so really, we said this is for anyone who wants to understand more about the reality of what's happening in our world. But there is a particular focus as well for ministry leaders and pastors. And I would add to that parents who are trying to ask the question, what do I do as a helper in this space? What do I do as someone that maybe this isn't my particular struggle, but I'm working with a church or teens or a ministry, and I know there are people I'm leading that this is their reality. What can I do, or what do I need to be aware of? So in that regard, there is a focus on leaders, parents, pastors, but I think when you read the report, because of the giftedness that Barna has, there's great insights in there for every one of us, regardless of what our role is right now.
And who were the subjects of the research, and how were they collected?
That's a great question, one that we had, because we looked at the data and said, you know, well, what if we pay you more? Could you interview more people? And that's where they helped me understand the difference between qualitative data and quantitative. You know, and so sometimes we're impressed that, oh, this survey asked 50,000 people. But if every one of those 50,000 people was a 35-year-old white single mom or something like that, the answers are going to be pretty similar. And they said, what we're after is qualitative data. And they work with a survey company that does all that in the demographics, that they said, we are looking for a saturation point of men and of women, of age groups, of nationality, of ethnicity. And we know that we need to get a certain number of responses from that demographic to have really good information. But once we hit that saturation point, there's a law of diminishing returns that you're just going to keep getting more of the same answers that you've already received. And so some people might be surprised if they pick up the book, The Porn, Beyond the Porn Phenomenon. I think the total sample size was like 2,500 people. But there's extreme confidence on their level that among those 2,500, all of us as a people are represented in age, in gender, in ethnicity. And I think that's what makes what Barna does so significant, is they're not just calling 10,000 people that think the same way. They're very intentionally making sure they have a broad spread of Christian, non-Christian, nominal Christian, old, young, and everything in between. Now, I would add one sticking point. We were really hopeful to get more good data from teenagers, but a lot of laws that have been passed recently for a teenager to implicate themselves in sexual activity would actually be admitting criminal activity, and you're not able to ask questions. So we weren't able to get the 13 to 17-year-old demographic like we had hoped, but we do have a lot of really good information about 18 to 25-year-olds, which was key for us. Because that was one of our big questions, is what has happened for Gen Z as young people that when they grew up, they've had the cell phone, the tablet, the iPad from day one. Like the iPad has been their babysitter from the time they were 3 years old. What impact has that had on them now that they are young adults and becoming young marrieds? So that, I think, is some of the most eye-opening information in the research, is that age group.
Yeah. Now, you briefly kind of summarized this earlier, but what were like the key questions, maybe even at a higher level? What were the things that you were really wanting to get answered through this study? I know you can't go through every single question that was asked, but in terms of like the kind of the bullseyes of what you were looking for, what were some of the key questions that you were trying to get answered through this survey?
Well, I think most people approach this and just wonder how many people are looking at pornography and how often and how prevalent is this issue. And so there were a number of questions around that. We wanted to understand people's perceptions and misconceptions about pornography and sexuality. We wanted to understand the nature of this in relationship. Were were people taking this to others? Who did they trust to take it to? Who didn't they trust? So a lot of questions around that. And then as I shared, the impact that it has on our life, because I think that's one of the lies that you all know and we know and that we hear a lot. And we all know it's a lie, but we're still so susceptible to it. And that is in this whole arena of believing that no one is being hurt. Well, this doesn't really impact me. It doesn't really hurt others. And so we thought, what are the ways that we could drill down into the way this impacts us, our mental well-being, our relationships? And then on the other side of it, how is a spouse being impacted? What is this doing within a community? And so a number of questions like that were really meant to just show the impact of pornography in a world that increasingly has just tried to convince us that, oh, it's no big deal. Everybody does it. No one's being hurt. And yet the reality really couldn't be further from the truth.
Mm. So what did this particular research reveal, maybe in comparison to what had been done in 2016? Because obviously that's a big time gap. What were some things that, you know, that were part of the 2016 research that were either updated or you realized, hey, there's a significant uptick in this, or there's a significant downturn, or it's about the same? What were some of the things that this new research revealed in comparison to some of the older research?
Many of the comparison questions were along the lines of the rate of struggle, how many people struggle, is it getting better, is it getting worse? And I think particularly among Christians, because if you look at the last, you know, 7-8 years, there are a number of ministries like ours that are making really good inroads to helping and offering services. I mean, I hear that all the time. There are more services and ministries in this area. I mean, I think we would both still say there's way too few, but there are more. There's been, you know, some things that have come out, a few movies, and the Conquer series has been used by many people, and we're understanding accountability software. So it's like, okay, we're making some progress, right? And yet what we found in comparison to 2016 is that at across the board, in age groups, gender, Christian, non-Christian, that our struggle is simply continuing to increase in terms of the percentage of people that would say, to some degree, I'm using pornography. So for example, in this study, it's found that 61% of all Americans would say, and that's men and women, young and old. So 61% say at some point, I'm viewing pornography. And that's up, I think, 11% over where it was 7 years ago. And then we're able to ask the question among practicing Christians. So practicing Christians would be someone that defines their faith as important to them and that they go to church regularly. And among practicing Christians, 54% would say, I'm viewing pornography. Wow. And in my knowledge, that is the first time that any survey would suggest that a majority of practicing Christians would acknowledge that they're struggling. So it's in the mid-70s, 75% of men, but also 40% of Christian women, which is there's greater percentage of growth among women acknowledging use of pornography than there is among men. And of course, we're continuing to see that the younger demographics are consuming more. Interestingly, like among Gen Z men, there's not that, it's only 78% of Gen Z men that say they view pornography compared to the standard of 75%. But among young women, so 18 to 25 year old women, 66% said, yes, at some point in my life, I'm viewing pornography. So there's a huge growth there among young people, which I think we've seen as being a byproduct of the sexualized world and culture they grew up in, that this has become a normal experience, even for practicing Christians. So, and I say all that too, just to express again that really across the board among genders, age groups, we're just seeing this incremental growth in people's use of pornography. And I think that is a little bit frightening, that in comparison to having more services, more people talking about it, more attention on it, we're actually not seeing or experiencing much change collectively as a people.
Yeah. It kind of makes you wonder where's the felt need, right? There seems to be a numbness in that when it's like, okay, the data is clearly showing that there's just an uptick in these behaviors. And yet, even with more resources available to address that, that data might be indicating those who are using don't have a felt need to get help. Like there seems to be a disconnect there between the use And is that, do you think part of that is just the ubiquitous nature of porn in our culture now? Like we're a pornified culture that it's hard to see that maybe there is a need to get help for my porn use.
That's actually a question that we asked about. People were posed the question, how comfortable are you with the level of pornography that you're using? So this would be among people that expressed anything from I'm using pornography daily to less often than once a month. So maybe a few times a year. And people were given the option of I'm completely comfortable, I'm somewhat uncomfortable, or I wish I didn't use it at all. And only 21% of practicing Christians answered, I wish I didn't use pornography at all. And I think that was one of the really unexpected surprises. I think, you know, when we work here at Pure Desire Ministries and like you do at Be Broken, we're in this fundamental place of seeing the devastation it's causing to marriages and to people's faith and to relationships. And we have this belief that it's harmful in any degree. And we wish and believe everyone should be free of it. And we maybe think that's how others feel as well. But the reality is only 21% are in that boat with us, wishing they didn't use it at all. And I think there are a number of factors. I mean, just what we've talked about, that we're living in a culture that does say, oh, it's no big deal. Everybody does it. No one's being hurt. You know, what does it matter? And so even that level of acceptance of rationalizing and minimizing what we do, I think has in a significant way slipped into our ways of thinking as believers, because we maybe compare ourselves more to others. That's very common in this area. And I think there is a reality that the average Christian who says this is in their life, it's probably once or twice a month, give or take a little bit. And at that level, we're able to go, well, yeah, I slipped up a little bit, looked at some things on Facebook I shouldn't last night, but you know, I'm not looking at the hardcore stuff. I'm not binging for days. I'm whatever we've defined as being a problem, we say, well, I'm not that. And so where I'm at, we've maybe adopted that mindset. And some of this is how our brain cooperates with us. We don't want to live in this cognitive dissonance that I keep doing something I truly believe I shouldn't be. So we either have to stop doing it or we have to rationalize how often we do it. And I think we're kind of seeing the addictive mindset played out in that answer, because the addictive brain goes, well, it's not that bad. I could stop if I really wanted to, but it's not that big of a deal. So I'm comfortable where I'm at. And yet that comfort, I don't think is a measurement of health or right. being the kind of society that we want to be.
So was there anything else from the research that sort of surprised you, or you weren't expecting that that would be how the data played out?
There were some of the misconceptions. In fact, it's, I think, one of the first pages of the report, and I actually believe it's free on our website and on Barna.com if you go and look up Beyond the Porn Phenomenon. We asked about common misconceptions around pornography, and one of them was the statement, I believe that I could regularly view pornography and live a sexually healthy life. And two-thirds of people, 67%, affirmed that statement, that I could view pornography regularly and live a sexually healthy life. And that, I think, just underscores what we've been talking about with the other question. There is this divide in our thinking, even as Christians, that has kind of put spiritual health and maturity and honoring God with my body. Hey, I'm not having sex outside of marriage. I can be healthy and I can have a little bit of pornography. And I can even regularly view that, because we've disconnected the two. Rather than seeing that, like, at a brain level and a body level, it's impossible to disconnect what we're doing with our thoughts, what we're doing with our bodies, from what's happening in our heart and in our soul. So I think that was surprising for us to see the level at which we've maybe just accepted where we are and even compartmentalized it enough to think we're okay. But another one too that was both compelling and surprising is we asked people the question, is anyone in your life helping you avoid pornography? And this was among people that would acknowledge to some degree, I'm viewing it. So then they were asked the follow-up, is anyone helping you? And I think particularly for Christians, we've done well. I would say that we've done well at encouraging honesty, that you need to tell someone, you need to talk to a brother, get to with a sister in Christ and share something, have an accountability partner, you know, send them your covenant eyes report. I feel like that message is out there in some format in most churches. And yet when they were asked that question, 84% of people picked no one. Wow. No one is helping me avoid pornography. And to me, that's sobering. But to me, that's also one of the silver linings of the report, because it says, wait a minute, if right now 84% of people say no one is helping me, that is kind of the hidden answer we feel in this struggle. What if those 84% of people had someone walking beside them saying, I'm with you in this, you're not alone, and we're going to go after this together? What difference might that make in all of the other questions, right? So I think I maybe assumed that, yeah, we might see an increased rate of struggle, but I also thought most people would say, yeah, I've got an accountability partner. Yeah, I've told a friend. Yeah, I've entrusted a mentor with this information. But still, a vast majority would say, nope, I'm doing this alone. And as we know, if you're doing it alone, your success and victory and freedom will always be limited, because being alone is part of the problem.
Was there anything that indicated why that number was so high? Like why people felt like they either couldn't share or, you know, didn't have anyone that was helping them?
Yeah, a couple of things. You know, another question was asked, does anyone even know? You know, so it's not, are they helping me? Does anyone even know about your struggle? And they were given all the options of like a spouse, a friend, a family member, an adult, I don't even know. And one of the answers was no one knows. And 48% of practicing Christians said, no one even knows I'm struggling. And I think that is a challenge that was a little eye-opening to see that we're still in the church, is that this is so secretive. It's so shameful. It's just so hard to talk about, that half of people that have a struggle still haven't told anybody. Well, if they haven't told anybody, of course no one's helping them, because they're still stuck in the secrecy. Yeah. And, you know, so that again elevates our need to create places of grace, places of vulnerability where it's welcomed and encouraged, and people see that, wow, they really will accept me in my low places. That was key. But another question that was asked that I think speaks to that a little bit is the question, who would you go to, or who would you feel comfortable talking to about this problem if you were struggling with pornography? And I believe this was asked both the people who acknowledge they struggle and those who don't. It was just, who would you feel comfortable talking to? The number one answer was a counselor. The number two answer was a doctor. And I think those are interesting, especially when you put them together, because if you think about it, both a counselor and a doctor are paid professionals whose job it is to hear of my problems and give me advice for what to go and do about it by myself. If you want to get to like your spiritual advisor or pastor, you get all the way down to like number 9 and 10 on the list, and only 11% of people said I would feel comfortable talking to my pastor. And I don't, in any way, I'm not saying that to criticize pastors. I am one and I've been one. But I think it's a reminder to us that when we maybe feel like, oh, I've told lots of people, hey, you can tell me anything, there is still a high, high level of reticence and fear for the average person to really believe that if I went to my pastor and said, Pastor, I have a big struggle with pornography, will you help me? Most people believe that's not a safe environment. They would rather go to their doctor, who may have no equipping whatsoever to care for them, but they just seem like, well, that's the professional's job. What could we do as leaders, as churches, as pastors, to create a sense among Christian leaders that we're here to care? And if you brought this issue, we would not reject you. We wouldn't shame you. We wouldn't give you pithy answers. We would listen, and we would care, and we would help. Because I think if that's generally what people saw from a pastor or leader, that number would not be down at 11%, that it could be much, much higher.
Well, and you think about a counselor and doctor too, they're also bound by privacy laws too, right?
Yes,
they can't. There's a confidentiality aspect to that. And I think that's also what's in the back of someone's mind when they're saying, if I am going to tell anybody about this thing that I've never told anybody, I want it to be to someone who is bound to sort of like a privacy and confidentiality law. So let's talk about then, like, what do we do about it? So let's start with the church. Like, practically speaking, I mean, working off of all this data that's come through this research, what can churches practically do to try to meet the need that is really highlighted through this research?
As I mentioned, Jonathan, I think as we emphasize, and I know Be Broken does as well, we have got to create safe places where people feel confidence that not only could I share it, but I'm even invited to, I'm welcome to it. And part of that being a safe place is not just creating an environment where people might be honest, because I think that's maybe our go-to is like, well, we'll get the men away on a retreat, or we'll have this special women's event, and in small groups, we'll create that safety. And that is important. That can be valuable. But if there isn't accompanied with it some kind of plan, some kind of evidence that if you share this, we know what to do with it, I think people aren't going to share, because we've seen enough of kind of confession time of like, man, he bared his soul and everybody prayed for him, and that's the last time we talked about it. Like, we just kind of swept it back under the rug, and everybody went on. You know, it's like, well, who wants to go to KFC for lunch? You know, it's like that attitude versus if we create the safe place and we can share it, you know, and if you come to us, we've got this group that we've created, or we've got this ministry that we partner with that runs recovery weekends. We have a group of mentors that are offering to walk with you through it. And here's the plan of how they can help you. That, I think, is what creates confidence, because the other side that maybe we haven't given enough credence to is I'm finding that everyone has heard some horror stories.
Oh, yeah.
They've heard about the guy that went to his pastor and acknowledged this problem. And the pastor just said, well, stop doing that. What are you thinking? You're going to lose your marriage. And that's all they got. It was like, okay, I guess I should stop doing it. Okay. Right. Or
as
the
if
woman
you never thought of that before, yeah. Right? Like that's some novel advice.
Well, okay. Yeah, exactly. Or the couple that went in and acknowledged this hurt, and the pastor looked at the wife and said, well, how much sex are you giving him? And even advise him, well, go home and have more sex. And even if as a pastor or leader, we're like, man, that's terrible advice. I would never say that. I think everybody has heard that story. And there's the fear of you're saying, oh, you can tell me anything. But the question in the back of our minds is still, but what are you going to do when I actually go there? Mm-hmm. When I get real, will you know how to help me? Or you just pray for me and tell me to go try harder. And so that's where if we have a plan, and that doesn't mean we've got to know what to do. We don't have to be the expert, but we've got resources like Be Broken or Pure Desire or others that we feel like, man, we don't have all the answers, but we're partnered with people that provide really good help. And we're resourcing you to their groups, or we're implementing some of their curriculum with groups in our church, or we've got mentors here that are trained in how to help. When people hear that, then it's like, oh, they both invited me to share. And when I share, they know what to do with me. I think then we'd see more people actually engaging in this very, very difficult conversation.
Now, there's a lot of our audience that is going to immediately say, I'm not a pastor. I'm not even a leader in my church. I'm not a quote unquote influencer in that way. So, but what can an individual follower of Jesus do as a result of this research? Like, I don't want 90% of our audience to feel somehow quote unquote powerless to do anything because they're not in a position of authority in their church or in their community. So what can just an individual do as a result of knowing what they've learned here today?
I think if 84% of people who view pornography say no one is helping me, and half of them say no one even knows, that's a place for all of us to pause and say, well, I have friends, or I have family members that I care about. I have kids that I'm close to. Have I opened that door in a way that would invite the conversation? And I think if that's where we're at, you know, when we're on that hike with a friend to say, hey, you know, I've heard some fascinating data about how many people struggle with pornography. And I just want to let you know, if this is an issue in your life at all, I'd be happy to talk about it. And because I know it's hard to talk about, but I'd love to support you. Or maybe we're in that 48%. Like, I've never really told anyone because it's awkward, it's weird, it's once in a while, but we know someone that we have some level of confidence. They care about us enough that they would walk with us into that part of our lives, and opening that door and creating that conversation would be so, so valuable. And I think just the percentage of people that struggle as well, particularly the elevated numbers among our young people, it only further drives home the reality that this is the world we are living in. And we can't immediately change the world. I mean, we would like to, and I believe over time the church can and does influence culture, but there is a continued wake-up call here to say our young people are growing up in a world where this is the air they breathe. And if we're not creating healthy structures and conversations to support them, to offer help and hope and guidance, we're basically condemning them to a life where this is just going to be what they have to deal with, and no one's offering that help. You know, one sample from young adults, 18 to 25 year olds, were asked if they have been sent nude images on their phone. And like 75% of young adults, male and female, say, yeah, I've been sent a nude image. And wow, over half of them acknowledge, and I have sent that nude image. You know, and so there's an awareness there of like, in young adult culture, and we may totally disagree with it for those of us that didn't grow up with a cell phone, in young adult culture, sending nude images of ourselves or others has become common. And that probably causes some of us to sit back and go, wait, common? I mean, I was talking with my 20-year-old daughter about this a little while back and some of this data, and she's really fascinated by the data. And when I brought up the sending of nudes, she said, Dad, I have friends who sent nudes before they started dating. It was like the introductory phase of their relationship. And it's like, what? In my day and age, when I didn't have a cell phone when I was dating, like I couldn't even have thought to do that if I wanted to. And to know that that's common for young people, well, that suggests we've got to be willing to engage there and do some training and discipling, not in a condemning way of like, well, if you do this, it's shame on you or that's sin. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think that's what our young people need, but I think what they need is that help processing. Why might this be unhealthy for a relationship? Why might this set me up actually for a destructive relationship? Why does this grieve God because of how it objectifies my body or that of others? And to explain those why questions in a way that could help a young person, or maybe help us because maybe we're in it too, that could help us expand our understanding of sexuality beyond just, you know, right and wrong, sin and righteousness, to know the why of why is this healthy or unhealthy? Why is this harmful or hurtful or helpful in a relationship? The more that we can enter into that, I think we invite our young people to think about wisdom and to think about the kind of relationships they want to have versus just mindlessly entering into the way that our world is doing relationships now and waiting to then see the tragic outcomes that we believe will happen if that's the kind of relationship someone's entering into.
Yeah. Well, as we wrap up, Nick, I want to have you say a word to the parents, especially those who are probably breathing into a paper sack right now and just really feeling the weight of a lot of this data that was shared and maybe wondering how on earth do I raise my kids in this environment without total fear and total just, you know, feeling like I got to stick my head in the sand and just ignore it all or be hyper vigilant to the point where I'm, you know, both helicopter and tank mom and whatever, you know, all that. What word of just hope and confidence and maybe peace would you give to the parents, especially who are raising kids in this culture?
Someone once said that anything worth doing is worth doing poorly. And I kind of like that advice to parents because I think we do feel like, I don't know the right words to say, the perfect timing. What if I say too much? What if I say too little? And we end up doing nothing. And this is an area where if your heart is to help your kids or to help young people around you, if you're not just trying to beat them over the head to tell them how bad they are, like, and I don't think any of us want that. If our heart is to help and we approach from a place of care and curiosity and compassion, even if we do it poorly, it's going to make a difference. And I would encourage parents just walk into their room and say, how are you doing? And can I help? And in that moment, your kid might be like, oh, what are you talking about? I'm fine. I don't know. But if you just say, man, well, I just want you to know I care. And if you ever want to talk, I'm here for you. That little moment could be a game changer for a son or daughter to go, you know what? I think they mean it. And what I'll say is at the most unexpected time, right? Like you're going to be walking into the grocery store or you're going to be getting ready for church and they're going to come into your room and ask a totally unexpected question. But the only reason they're doing it is because you've started to create this environment where you walked into the room and said, I'm here. I care. I won't reject you. I'd love to help you in this area. And that could go so much further than you expect. You don't have to know all the data. You don't have to explain the brain. You don't have to understand all the ins and outs of anatomy. If you just showed that care and compassion to be a safe place for your kids or young people around you, and I think when we see that, it's like, oh, I could do that. That's doable. That would make a huge difference. So start there.
Yeah, that's That's so good. Well, Nick, this has been a phenomenal conversation. Where can our listeners and viewers go to get the research, but also just more resources from your ministry?
Yeah, everything's at puredesire.org. If you go to puredesire.org/Barna, because it's the Barna report, you'll get a page of some of the data and stats I've been talking about, as well as some of our follow-up resources, both free things you could download or things you could purchase, as well as right now, we're offering 50% off the book itself, the report, Beyond the Porn Phenomenon, because we just want to make sure people have the chance to go through some of the data. And like I said, there is so much more than we could talk about today. And Barna puts it on a level that is understandable for all of us. We'd love to have you pick that up if you'd like. And as well at barna.com, they've got some great resources on there of articles they've written, tools. And if you buy, this is what I would say for leaders, if you buy the report, either at Barna or at Pure Desire, you get free access to what they call the Church Toolkit. And the Church Toolkit has additional videos, slideshows, a survey assessment tool that you could use in your church that could all help you take that data deeper and take some steps with your staff or congregation. And again, that's free if they just get a copy of the report. So check that out if you're in leadership. That Church Toolkit at Barna.com is super helpful. And could give you more ideas about your next steps.
That's great. Well, Nick, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. And so thanks again for being on the program.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Jonathan, and appreciate the way that we can link arms together in this very, very important battle.
Absolutely. Well, listeners and viewers, we got a lot that we're going to put in the show notes. So please go check all that out so you can get access to that research report, but also all the great tools that are at Pure Desire. And we're always glad that you're with us. We want to help you take your next best step towards experiencing wholeness in Christ. So please reach out to us for that. And we'll see you back here again next time on the Pure Sex Radio program. Take care.
Pure Sex Radio is paid for by Be Broken Ministries. Visit us online at puresexradio.com.